country. So we respect Mexico's position.
And finally, I wanted to ask you about something that's been in the media now for several years here in the United States, the so-called Havana syndrome of diplomats from the United States suddenly becoming sickened in Cuba. Could you talk about what you know about this?
The so-called Havana,
30 seconds.
The so-called Havana syndrome is a fable. It was created to derail the relationship between Cuba and the United States. They needed an excuse. The big question is, who invented this? The media has not gone far enough to say who invented, how was this theory that challenges science, challenges physics, challenges the academic community around the world, how was that invented, and how did the government of the United States decide to incorporate it in its agenda?
In fact, U.S. diplomats say that they're getting sick around the world.
And we don't question the symptoms that people might have. What we question is the explanation that began by Sonic, and then they're saying that it's a concussion without a concussion having occurred. Scientists say that does not test the threshold of any academic or scientific approach.
We want to thank you so much for being with us, Cuba's Deputy Foreign Minister, Carlos Fernandez de Cosío. And for those of you who speak Spanish, you can go to democracynow.org's Spanish website to see our interview in Spanish. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
I'm Naomi Klein, and you are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM.
Hey, KBOO listeners, you want to tune in to PDX Progressive Talk Radio every fourth Wednesday at 7 p.m., where we do a deep dive into issues that matter most to our community. Every month, we're taking on homelessness, community policing, supporting local small businesses, and so much more. We're here to foster solutions and move progressive change. Brought to you by our dedicated team, me, Sherry Morish, and our host, Moses Ross, this show is your go-to for progressive dialogue and local action. Don't miss out on the conversations that are shaping Portland and the Pacific Northwest. Join us on PDX Progressive Talk Radio every fourth Wednesday at 7 p.m. right here on KBOO, where together we're the voice of change.
KBOO Community Radio couldn't do it without you. Support KBOO by becoming a member during our spring membership drive, taking place now through May 25th. Your contribution goes towards postmodern, avant-garde, alternative radio. Donate now by going to kboo.fm/give. Thank you.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, President Biden signs Congress's bill to ban TikTok.
Supreme Court justices indicate willingness to rule in favor of Grants Pass in its quest to ban homelessness in city limits.
And new federal funding helps Oregonians without home internet get access to the web.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, April 24th, 2024. I'm Althea Billings.
And I'm Reed Johnson. President Biden has approved $95 billion in war aid to Ukraine and Israel. Biden proposed the funds last fall, only to see the aid package caught up in Congress for months. Nearly $61 billion are set for Ukraine. These funds include nearly $14 billion to purchase weapons and $9 billion of forgivable loans. An additional $26 billion goes, somewhat contradictorily, towards Israel and humanitarian relief in Gaza. Israel, which has killed over 34,000 people in Gaza, is set to receive $4 billion to replenish missile defense systems. The $9 billion set aside for humanitarian assistance in Gaza will not go towards the United Nations Relief and Works Agency, or UNRWA, the largest employer and aid agency in the territory. a Republican provision will make sure that aid will continue to be withheld from that agency in Gaza. The remaining $8.1 billion goes towards the Indo-Pacific region as the Biden administration continues to ramp up tensions with China.
Further Chinese antagonism found its voice in a potential TikTok ban. Majority Democrats and Republicans introduced the provision in an attempt to draw support from hardline Republicans who disapproved of Ukraine spending. The provision gives TikTok's Chinese parent company ByteDance a year to sell the app to a non-Chinese company or face a federal ban. Around 170 million Americans use TikTok. TikTok CEO Shouji Chu responded by saying, quote, "We aren't going anywhere. The facts in the Constitution are on our side, and we expect to prevail again," end quote, in reference to the three previous efforts to ban TikTok that were blocked by federal judges. Evan Greer is the director of Fight for Future. Greer said, quote, "Whether it's dressed up as a ban or a forced sale, the bill targeting TikTok is one of the stupidest and most authoritarian pieces of tech legislation we've seen in years," end quote. The aid package passed the Senate with overwhelming support. Oregon Senator Jeff Merkley, along with Bernie Sanders and Peter Welch of Vermont, voted against the bill for its military support for Israel.
The Supreme Court is discussing whether to decide in favor of Grants Pass in the Oregon City's push to make homelessness a punishable offense. Last week, Supreme Court justices heard oral arguments in the Grants Pass v. Johnson case. The case will decide whether Grants Pass anti-camping ordinances constitute, quote-unquote, cruel and unusual punishment. That would make the ordinances in violation of the Eighth Amendment. The ordinances banned conduct, like sleeping with bedding, in public areas like sidewalks and parks. Violators received a $295 fine, which increased beyond $500 if not paid. Lawyers representing Gloria Johnson and other claimants argue the ordinances effectively criminalize homelessness. In similar cases, federal courts have found these laws unconstitutional. In those cases, courts ruled against punishing the condition of homelessness when there was no other alternative. Grants Pass currently offers no public shelters. On Monday, Supreme Court justices appeared to signal a shift in legal opinion as they discussed the case. Justice Elena Kagan voiced her support for anti-criminalizing precedent, saying, quote, "Sleeping is a biological necessity. It's sort of like breathing. You can say breathing is conduct too, but presumably you would not think that it's okay to criminalize breathing in public. And for a homeless person who has no place to go, sleeping in public is kind of like breathing in public," end quote. Chief Justice John Roberts and others in the conservative majority looked upon the Grants Pass ordinances more favorably. In a series of questions, they noted the ordinances don't explicitly prohibit homelessness. Across the aisle, justices seem to get caught up on the difference between one's status and conduct. Courts have upheld Eighth Amendment violations in the past when they attempt to punish someone's status. Roberts rhetorically addressed how flimsy protecting conduct can be, asking, quote, "If someone is hungry and no one is giving him food, can you prosecute him if he breaks into a store to get something to eat?" end quote. A majority in the Supreme Court may form around reclassifying homelessness as a conduct which changes and therefore can be punished.
Also before the Supreme Court is a case that could have implications for the country's growing labor movement. Justices heard oral arguments in Starbucks versus McKinney on Tuesday. They'll need to determine if the bar should be raised for the National Labor Relations Board when it seeks to impose court-ordered injunctions on companies. David Groves with the Washington State Labor Council says the Supreme Court could further undermine the power of the NLRB, the independent federal agency that protects employees' rights.
We already have weak labor laws in this country that have such minor penalties for breaking union organizing laws that companies routinely do it. And this is another opportunity for them to weaken labor laws even further.
The case involves Starbucks' firing of seven employees in Memphis during their union campaign in 2021. The coffee company says it rehired the workers and denies wrongdoing. If the justices rule in favor of Starbucks, it could make it harder for the NLRB to seek court orders. Grove says the law states that workers have a right to organize unions in their workplace without coercion or retaliation from their employers.
that's all fine and good, but if the penalty's not significant enough, then they'll just go ahead and break that law and consider it the cost of doing business if they have to pay a fine 2 years down the road.
Grove says his and other labor organizations support the passage of the Protecting the Right to Organize, or PRO Act, in Congress, which would strengthen labor laws, including providing greater authority to the NLRB.
Spokane, Washington has joined a lawsuit against the manufacturers of toxic chemicals known as PFAS after the discovery of the chemicals in the city's drinking water. PFAS, also known as forever chemicals, are linked to cancer and other health effects and have been found at high levels in the West Plains near Spokane International Airport. Chuck Danner lives in the area and says a test found he had twice the average rate of the chemicals in his blood. He says he since stopped drinking water from his well and notes that the body metabolizes the chemicals eventually.
But it takes up to 40 years to metabolize one of the chemicals out of your body, and it's a lengthy thing. I won't live that long, so it's going to be with me forever.
Danner says the PFAS crisis has hurt his property value and caused him mental anguish. He adds that his daughter has thyroid disease, which could be connected to PFAS in his water well. The organization West Plains Water Coalition has been working to bring justice for community members. The PFAS came from firefighting foam used at the Spokane airport. Jeff DeBray with Fuse Washington says the airport and West Plains are in the part of the city represented by Commissioner Al French, who served on the airport board. DeBray says the commissioner initially put roadblocks in the way of investigating this issue.
We're interested in protecting public health for people, and immediately to me that is centered around accountability. And we have a basic expectation that our public officials will be invested in protecting the health of citizens.
In response, French says this is a national issue and that he's been working alongside state and federal governments to unveil a solution this week. He also notes that the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency only recently unveiled a PFAS water standard. Danner says he expects a response to rectify this issue.
I would like to see them accept responsibility and be held accountable for what has taken place. And the least of that would be to provide a filter system for my well and or clean drinking water.
That was Chuck Danner, a Spokane resident with PFAS-contaminated water.
Oregon Governor Tina Kotek announced last week that she will go ahead and approve $14 million worth of water-related infrastructure projects. Kotek previously voiced concerns that seven projects at issue might not directly lead to new housing. She threatened to cancel plans on those projects, saying that she needed more information from project leaders in order to make her decision. Kotek said she received sufficient follow-up info and expressions of commitment from project representatives last week to satisfy her concerns. Those projects are in Clackamas County, the Tualatin Valley Water District, Siletz, Butte Falls, Shady Cove, Cresswell, and Gold Hill. Housing and housing development dominated the recent legislative session. The state approved roughly $100 million to 44 projects that are meant to spur housing growth. Also on this topic, the governor said she'd go ahead and approve the $2 million for a new 30,000 square foot footwear and apparel design and manufacturing hub in Portland's Old Town. She'd also expressed concerns about that project's viability in the past. As Oregon governor, Kotek has line item veto power, whereby she can cancel specific parts of a bill while signing the rest of it into law.
Portland Public Schools Interim Superintendent Sandy Husk is set to present next year's school budget tonight to the school board. Husk introduced the $2.39 billion proposed budget at the beginning of the week. The budget is all-inclusive, meaning it contains bond funds and other revenue streams. It dedicates $1 billion for day-to-day operations. That's $600,000 more than last year's budget, but officials say this doesn't satisfy rising costs. Husk held a press conference on Monday to talk about the proposed budget. She says it's largely the same as the budget introduced by then-Superintendent Guadalupe Guerrero in February. That budget contained $30 million in cuts. Those included $15 million cuts to central administrative offices and schools' operating budgets, respectively. In April, PPS specified there would be additional cuts to special ed teams. assistive technology specialists for nonverbal students, feeding teams, adaptive PE, behavior analysts, and multilingual supports for speech pathologists may lose staff. The district said these staffing cuts are part of a new special education model and not the result of budget shortfalls. School districts across the state are introducing lean budgets. Salem Kaiser is set to cut 400 positions, and Jervis may close if its bond proposal fails.
The U.S. Senate moves to pass its foreign aid package. A North Carolina judge overturns an aged law penalizing released felons, and child protection groups call a Texas immigration policy traumatic for kids. With more on these stories, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Today, the Senate sends a unified message to the entire world. America will always defend democracy in its hour of need.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says he's pleased to see the chamber finally take up a major foreign aid package. Congress looks poised to pass $60 billion for Ukraine, $26 billion for Israel, and $6 billion for Taiwan. Also likely is a ban for TikTok in the U.S. unless Chinese owner ByteDance divests from it. President Joe Biden says he'll sign the legislation. The foreign aid continues to spark GOP infighting, as did demands for a bipartisan border compromise that died after objections from former President Donald Trump. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell says that led to months of work that ended up wasted.
First, it was an effort to make law, which requires you to deal with Democrats. And then a number of our members thought it wasn't good enough. And then our nominee for president didn't seem to want us to do anything at all.
Meanwhile, at Trump's criminal trial, former tabloid publisher David Pecker testified about catch-and-kill tactics the National Enquirer used to cover up bad news about the former president. Pecker says they would pay for exclusive stories and then bury them. He says they used that to hide Trump's affairs with porn star Stormy Daniels and Playboy model Karen McDougal. A North Carolina judge says felons on post-release supervision can't be prosecuted for voting by mistake. U.S. Judge Loretta Biggs says an 1877 state law is vague and allows district attorneys to pursue their personal agendas. Jarvis Johnson with Forward Justice says the state needs to do more to tell people with criminal records about their rights.
As gracious as the state is in letting individuals know that they're not being able to vote, it would be just as gracious if they would let those individuals know that they could vote.
The U.S. Supreme Court is set for oral arguments on whether patients can access emergency abortions in states that ban it. Idaho versus United States could decide when a provider can perform medically necessary abortions under a federal law that allows emergency treatment. Cleveland emergency room Dr. Polly Wiltz says right now patients with pregnancy complications are being denied routine OBGYN care because providers are confused and frightened.
Regarding pregnancy-related complaints, I see first trimester pregnant patients every single day in my shift. I have caught ectopic pregnancies that have ruptured.
While the Texas law allowing state and local police to arrest suspected migrants is mired in court challenges, groups are speaking out about the abusive impacts of Operation Lone Star on children. Governor Greg Abbott is still busing migrant families to other states, but Robert Sanborn with Children at Risk says the state is knowingly traumatizing kids.
We never want children to be political pawns. We don't want maximum chaos on the backs of children. We want children to grow up and be assets for our community.
The city of Baltimore is accusing the owners of the Dolly and its crew of negligence in causing the collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth interview with Street Roots digital producer Kanani Cortez about the latest edition of the paper, The Spring Anthology, Volume 2. At 6, it's The Underground, produced by KBOO's own youth collective. This week's episode, Wednesday Night Live. Then at 7, PDX Progressive Talk Radio with Sherry Morish. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with an overnight low of 45. Tomorrow's weather, rainy, with a high of 55. Today in history, in 1990, the Hubble Space Telescope is launched from the Space Shuttle Discovery. It's still in operation as one of the largest and most versatile space telescopes. The quote of the day is from American political activist and journalist Mumia Abu-Jamal, born on this day in 1954. He said, quote, Conventional wisdom would have one believe that it is insane to resist this, the mightiest of empires. But what history really shows is that today's empire is tomorrow's ashes, that nothing lasts forever, and that to not resist is to acquiesce in your own oppression. The greatest form of sanity that anyone can exercise is to resist that force that is trying to repress, oppress, and fight down the human spirit.
The Kowalungan tribe is creating a new program to bring fresh food to all of Unalaska. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Kowalungan tribe of Unalaska is launching a new program to provide fresh, organic, Alaska-sourced foods to the entire Aleutian community and some regional partners. KUCB's Andy Lesk spoke with some tribal staff to learn more.
Organizers did a distribution trial run last month. At the event, Unalaskans came to the tribe's food bank and received bags full of carrots, potatoes, cabbage, and beef, all completely free. That produce and meat came from a family farm in Palmer. The tribe is interested in partnering with multiple providers over the course of the program, including local fishermen. Tanea Horn is the tribe's COO. She says the program is part of their ongoing wellness initiatives and aims to support Alaska farmers by offering their products to locals looking for high-quality, minimally processed foods.
For Alaska Native people, for American Indian people, our love language is food. That is how we show that we want to be partners with you, and we want to show you that we care about you.
The project first developed last spring when the Kowalungan tribe met with USDA representatives at an economic summit. The tribe was ultimately awarded over $2 million for the project through the USDA's Local Food Purchase Assistance Program. The project came together in partnership with the Aleutian Pribilof Islands Association, who helped facilitate rollout of produce and meat to tribal organizations across the Aleutian Islands region. Anfisa Tudiakoff is the Kowalungan tribe's cultural director.
So the more that we're able to harvest our natural foods on island and, you know, use natural foods from these farmers, you're getting less and less processed foods as the more that we do these kinds of programs.
Tribal Services Manager Marie Schomer says that during the trial run, around 5,000 pounds of food arrived and was distributed to the community.
I love doing it personally because a lot of families out here are struggling just because of the cost of food. And if you're able to give them a couple bags of fresh produce and meat, it's very helpful.
In Unalaska, there are no income restrictions to participation. Anyone is welcome to take food, whether they're a member of the Kowalungan tribe or not. The next event is slated for late April. Horn says she expects the program to do biweekly food bank events by the summer.
That was Andy Lesk reporting. The Intertribal Council of the Five Civilized Tribes in Oklahoma is the latest Native organization to pass a resolution in support of the establishment of a code to be used to help find missing and endangered adults. KCNP's Brian Brazier has more.
The resolution cited statistics from the National Crime Information Center, which shows that Native American men and women have historically been disproportionately affected by missing person cases at a percentage which is more than double that of the general U.S. population. Native American women are at an even greater risk of going missing or being endangered, with estimates that they are 10 times more likely to fall victim to homicide than the average American woman. The resolution also stated that these statistics emphasize the urgent need for focused attention and specialized support, like the new Missing and Endangered Persons, or MEP, code. Used with Emergency Alert System, or EAS, and the Integrated Public Alert Warning System, known as IPAWS, the code would work like the familiar Amber Alert initiated when children are missing. The resolution stemmed from a letter from Native Public Media, who also sponsored a resolution that passed last year by the National Congress of American Indians. The resolution passed unanimously by the council, comprised of the Chickasaw Nation, Cherokee Nation, Muscogee Nation, Seminole Nation of Oklahoma, and the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma. For National Native News, I'm Brian Brazier.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
There are more than 170,000 residences with no or slow access to the internet in Oregon. But federal funding is helping address the challenges for connecting these places. Eric Tagedoff has more on the story.
Oregon is working to address the state's digital divide with hundreds of millions of dollars in funding. Infrastructure presents the largest challenges for connecting people in Oregon to high-speed broadband internet. Oregon Broadband Office Director Nick Batts says there are more than 170,000 residences in the state with no or slow internet access.
Our goal through the broadband office and with all of our stakeholders throughout Oregon is to provide access to all 112,000 unserved locations and as many of the 60,000 underserved locations as we can.
The state has received federal funding from a variety of sources, including nearly $690 million from the Broadband Equity Access and Deployment Program and more than $150 million from the Capital Projects Fund approved in the American Rescue Plan Act from 2021. Oregon's Digital Equity Plan has also been approved, and along with it, nearly $10 million in funding. Head of AARP Oregon, Bandana Shrestha, says there was a time when high-speed broadband internet was considered a luxury.
Now it's such a big necessity for everyone, including for older adults, because we know that if you don't have connectivity, you're not going to be able to see your doctor when you want to. Telemedicine is not going to be possible.
Batts says his office is working to ensure every Oregonian can get on the internet.
It is an interesting challenge. Nothing has been done like this in Oregon's history of trying to get internet access to everybody. So it's going to be quite the challenge, and it's absolutely going to require participation from everybody to make this happen.
For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
A $600 million settlement proposal would resolve all lawsuits covering thousands of East Palestine, Ohio residents affected by last year's Norfolk Southern train derailment. But environmental groups say the money doesn't address longstanding environmental concerns or lax regulations for the plastic industry. Nadia Ramlagan reports.
Residents of East Palestine, Ohio, say they continue to live with health problems, including rashes, nosebleeds, and respiratory issues, following last year's massive train derailment and chemical spill. According to the EPA, more than 177 tons of solid waste and 68 million gallons of water have been transported out of East Palestine for disposal. Jess Kennard with the group Beyond Plastics says vinyl chloride is a key ingredient in making PVC plastic. She says the disaster highlights the need to reduce production of industrial plastic and better regulate all stages of the plastic life cycle. She adds residents still don't have the resources they need to stay safe.
We are also in desperate need of residential indoor and outdoor air monitoring and air assessments for our homes. There are residents within the past month that have reported detections of vinyl chloride outside of their home.
Norfolk Southern recently agreed to a $600 million settlement in an attempt to resolve a string of lawsuits involving thousands of people. If it gets approved from all parties, it would resolve all class action claims by people and businesses who were within a 20-mile radius of the derailment site and personal injury claims within 10 miles. In a statement on the company's website, the settlement does not constitute any admission of liability, wrongdoing, or fault. Kennard contends the settlement won't prevent another train-related environmental disaster from happening. She points out the amount of money in the proposed settlement will hardly leave a dent in the pockets of a company whose profits topped $8 billion last year.
If the court accepts this settlement, it sets the precedent that there is a corporate price tag for poisoning communities. The court must uphold justice for the people.
Congress has stalled on passage of legislation that would boost regulations around inspections and fines for railroad companies that violate safety standards. Earlier this month, the Biden administration passed a new rule that requires freight operators to have at least two people on board in an attempt to increase safety. This is Nadia Ramlagan for Ohio News Connection.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael prefers to avoid courts and police.
Trump's on trial, but who isn't? The houses of Grant's past testifying before the Supremes, who'll also be deciding if Donnie is immune from democracy and justice, and it will be democracy convicted of obstruction, obstructing those whose constitutionally protected pursuit of extreme happiness endangers the planet and those living on it. Pick a country, any country. Trials and tribulations everywhere. Some places like Sudan taking a double dip with starvation and ethnic cleansing. Palestine, Yemen, Ecuador. Civil rights on trial in Hungary, Poland, Egypt. The earth on trial, accused of being overtreated and underpolluted. We get both trials and errors. Way more prison beds than shelter beds. Throughout history, the human race on trial, with the most powerful being the most criminal, whether generals, kings, or popes, many more trials than justice, though every once in a while. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You are listening to KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, April 24th, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael, Chris Gao, David Rosenberg, and myself. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Eric Tagadoff, Nadia Romlagan, Edwin J. Vera, and Antonio Gonzalez. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Reed Johnson.
And I'm Althea Billings. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members, lovely people like you. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings.